Okay, we made it. Good morning. Good morning, all. It is Tuesday, December 31st, aka New Year's Eve, 2024. So we're meeting in Tucson as they land Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve. I did want to make a little amends to the group for last week, not kind of highlighting Christmas without really being more inclusive of other holidays. And so if anybody felt kind of excluded from that conversation, I apologize for that. It was actually my intention to bring in other things and a little bit, but I know that at least one person was felt a little uncomfortable, so I apologize for that. Lovely to be together and just sit and reflect on the Dharma and our recovery. We were talking before we started the recording about the day long at Spirit Rock on Sunday, and it's kind of a continuation of that in a way. Just this time of year, naturally, there's reflections back and forward. I'd rather not reflect back right now. In fact, I'd rather not reflect forward either. I'd just rather just reflect right now. Right now is good. Breathing in, breathing out. Don't know mind is a great reminder from the Korean Zen master Sansanim. His meditation instruction was, as you breathe in, say to yourself, clear mind, clear mind. And as you breathe out, say to yourself, don't know. So, because you don't, we think we know, right? We really don't know. So let's begin with our sit, and we can just settle down into the body. And I had my usual morning sitting today and was just noticing again the impact of posture, that when I'm upright in a balanced way, that energy flows more naturally in my body. And then I'm more able to be mindful. So you can close your eyes or just lower your gaze and bring your attention into your body and just feel how you're holding your body. This simple element of mindfulness of posture, it's quite revealing. You can see how your mind state is directly affected by the way you're holding your body. For myself, I find that when I'm in bed or, going to sleep or waking up, that posture for me isn't conducive to mindfulness. I have to really make extra effort. It doesn't really develop into concentration for me. So even in the sitting posture, if I slump or let my chest collapse, there's a very different energy and mental state, even affects the mood. Just noticing that, working with that, and not setting up rules or saying something is right or wrong, rather to just bring awareness of the impact of these subtle shifts. Starting to pay attention to the breath, just the movement and sensations of breathing. Another simple practice can have remarkable impact. So just staying with the breath as best you can feel the sensations of breathing, the air at the nostrils, or the movement, flow of diaphragm, making room for the lungs to expand and contract. And we find that these simple suggestions become quite challenging to just pay attention to the breath in a sustained way. Quite difficult for us, the mind, so active, busy, running off to the future or the past. Trying to figure things out. Giving commentary, judgment. What's that all about? Where's that coming from? Why does the mind feel this need, even in this quiet and stillness, to keep generating thoughts? Not so important to answer that question. Not in a verbal way. What's more helpful is to feel the energy in the body and mind. That keeps thrusting forward with the mind, with words, with thoughts, with ideas. And we breathe with that energy, give it space, allow it, don't resist it. This doesn't mean that we indulge it with more thinking, but rather that we feel the raw, energetic compulsion to think without acting on it. And say that we become aware that we are powerless over this energy arising, but we don't have to act on much like our powerlessness over alcohol or drugs or other addictive behaviors. We're aware of those drives. We recognize that they have their own life, their own lifespan, but that we don't have to indulge in them or act on them. Whatever is happening in the mind, in the body, in the feeling realm, see if you can meet it with kindness, with gentleness, with care. It's challenging to have a mind and body, to be a human being. We don't have to make it more painful, judging ourselves or trying to force ourselves to be a certain way. You just accept how things are right now. Not perfect, but okay. Right. Well, I hope everyone is well, and that people have gotten through this, what is often a risky time of year for addicts, people in recovery, and and if not, then this is a good time to start again. Good time to reestablish or establish sobriety or whatever commitment you need to make. That idea of one day at a time is meant to help us, it's meant to help us to view things through view our addiction as something that needs to be addressed each day, but also can only be addressed today, so that if that we have been relapsed or acting out, that today is a new day. So we start again. So let me shift gears into a little more Dharma focus. As I mentioned, I was feeling getting like a little bit of a cold, and I guess last night my daughter was saying something about what she was going to do today, and my wife was like, "Well, Daddy's going to be teaching in the morning." I was like, "Oh yeah, right." And when you're kind of feeling off energetically, and it's like you forget what you have planned. And of course, this these holidays and falling in the middle of the week, it's like, what day is it? And indeed, when I woke up and kind of was dragging myself around this morning, but that's normal for me. I always have to drag myself in the morning. I'm not perky first thing, but it's like, oh my God, what am I gonna do? And I'm taking a shower. I'm like, maybe I'll just let people, blah blah. And then as finally I get around after I'm dressed, I take some time to sit, and I had a cup of tea. So as a Before I started my formal meditation, I drank the tea and picked up, the book that was sitting there, and it was the perfect one, which is from Ajahn Pasano. It's called Nourishing the Roots, and it's one that actually actually inspired me to really work with the Anapanasati Sutta, the Mindfulness of Breathing Sutta. It's a very little, very narrow book. It's only got, it's like maybe 40 pages or something, 35 pages. Oh, better kick in the mute all button again. I just open it up, right? As we do with the Dharma, it's like it's all good, right? It doesn't matter. This book, it's only three and a half years old, maybe. I've read it once or twice or five times. But I just want to read the beginning of this first chapter. It's just got about how many chapters in it? It's got five chapters. No, four chapters. The fifth chapter is about the author, so four chapters. So this is called Purifying the Foundation. Often, how we begin something tends to condition the direction it goes. Whenever there are various beginnings and endeavors that we embark on, starting in a clear and skillful way is really helpful. When we think about practicing meditation in our lives or developing our Buddhist practice, we tend to think of the different meditation techniques and our successes and failures in our meditation. Ajahn Chah was a great meditation master. He was somebody who taught meditation to the monastic and lay communities. He himself was very adept. But if you look at the bulk of his teachings, there's much more of an importance placed on two themes, sila and samadhi, virtue and right view. It's very important to take note of this because so often we think, what's wrong with my meditation technique? What's wrong with my mind? My mind is all over the place. We forget there are roots that need to be nurtured. So the name of the book is Nourishing the Roots. So sometimes it's much more useful to backtrack and see what we can do to reestablish our connection with our sila, our virtue, and examine what kind of view we are holding. In what ways can I adjust my view to be supportive of my practice? Often the meditation flows out of that. Everything has a root, and we are able to nourish the roots skillfully. There's a discourse in the Samyutta Nikaya that has the same theme. A monk comes to the Buddha and asks him for instructions so that he can go off and practice diligently. Curiously enough, the Buddha actually admonishes him, speaks to him pretty sharply, saying, "What is this? People coming and asking questions and not bothering to follow up on the practice." Then the monk reiterates, saying, "Please, may I have some instruction in brief so I can go off and practice?" The Buddha could be tough. I mean, yeah, he just really isn't always such a sweet guy. Then the Buddha agrees to teach. He says to purify the very starting point of wholesome states. To purify the very starting point of wholesome states is to purify virtue and to make one's views straight, aligning the views with samadhi, right view. He says that once one has purified sila and made one's views straight with that foundation, then direct one's attention to the four foundations of mindfulness. It's a very interesting instruction. The Buddha is placing emphasis on coming back and purifying the very starting point of wholesome states. When we direct our attention to mindfulness and to meditation, if that root of wholesome mental qualities is there, then the meditation is going to go a lot more smoothly. It's going to be much more accessible to us. Purifying virtue is not so much about getting the legal description of the precepts and then seeing how much one has to do and how much one can get away with. It's more about approaching the precepts from a place of hiri and otapa. In Buddhist practice, these qualities are called the protectors of the world. These protectors of the world are difficult to translate into English. A good translation for hiri is, and hiri is HIRI, is conscience, but it's sometimes a sense of shame or shrinking back from the unwholesome. It's important to recognize the difference because shame and guilt can make it very complicated. The root of conscience is a respect for oneself when one either is contemplating doing something or when one has done something that is unskillful. And it elicits a sense of, gosh, I can do a lot better than that. One wants to protect oneself from one's own unskillfulness. There's a sense of respect for oneself. There's directing attention to a sense of protection, of looking after oneself so that one is able to nurture the qualities that uplift the mind and brighten the heart. That's hiri. Otapa is often translated as a fear of wrongdoing. Again, it's a sense of shame and fear, but it's a fear of wrongdoing because of respect for others. So hiri and otapa are rooted in respect, respect for oneself and respect for others. One holds oneself and others dear. Then one doesn't want to harm or create suffering for others. When our integrity, our sila, has this wholesome root, it keeps bringing more and more wholesome mental states because it's based on a wise understanding that our actions have results, both for ourselves and for others. Since our actions have results, we want to make sure those results are ones that we can delight in and that create a sense of well-being and harmony with those around us. Just a little more, because I like this term. From a Buddhist perspective, our sila, our precepts, are training rules. Training, we're learning, educating ourselves. It's not beating ourselves into submission. It's a learning process. When we take the precepts, the Pali for the word precept is sikkhapadang. That word, sikkhapadang, is a mixture of two words, pada, which means foot or base, and sika, which is to learn, to study, to train, to educate. Certainly, in the Buddhist time, education was an actual hands-on engagement. It's not sitting down with a book and memorizing something, but learning through our conduct. We train and learn through doing. It's through our actions of body and speech that we're training, we're learning, we educate ourselves. What works, what doesn't work, what's beneficial, what's not beneficial, what leads to well-being and happiness, what leads to complication and difficulty. That's what precepts are. They're training rules that we gain skill in through living. Sometimes we get it right, sometimes we get it wrong, but we can learn from it. Purifying virtue is that willingness to learn from our engagement with our actions of body and speech, and then our mind is right there as well. It's a learning process. So, I just have a particular fondness for the Thai forest monks and Ajahn Pasano in particular, and I love the simplicity of his teaching, and yet so profound and practical. Excuse me. So that what particularly struck me as I was reading this myself this morning was him helping me to remember what sila means. Because I talk a lot, a fair amount about sila, and it's really important to me, but it does get confused sometimes with the idea of just the precepts, and he's taking this and making it much broader than that, and as he says, less rule bound than that, but rather that we are, we're checking in with ourselves. We're aware for ourselves. How does this feel when I do this, when I say this, when I think this? How does it feel when I act out in this way? And it's this wish to not do harm that's really at the heart of sila, to bring goodness into the world. So those two, right? To not do harm and to bring goodness. And again, one of the things I say again, because I often say this, and I was saying this on Sunday, that one of the things that this is one of the reasons I love to work with people in recovery, because we have that as a foundation principle of recovery, is to not harm ourselves and to not harm others, to bring goodness into the world. And we don't have an idea of, we're not setting up these ideals, perfections that we're supposed to live up to. I mean, sometimes people can get, caught in like, oh, spiritual awakening, what is that? But really, I feel that the steps and the process of recovery is simpler than that, and much more just about trying to live skillfully and wholesomely. And so, it doesn't like being a Buddhist or, which I don't love the idea. But, and meditating and all this stuff, it doesn't have to become this whole thing of, deep states or, transcendent experiences or blinding insights, So all that can happen in moments, but that's not what this is about. Certainly not for me. And Ajahn Pasano really communicates this, that what a spiritual path is about this moment and this moment and this moment, and living with these principles guiding you day by day. I've been going back to, talking about, psychedelics and the people going to psychedelics for spiritual experiences. And it finally struck me what it is that I'm trying to say about this. Not that I think that there's something wrong with using, substances that can help you to have a spiritual awakening or a moment of insight, but that psychedelics aren't a program and meditation isn't a program. No, this is not what this is about, because having a deep state of meditation, that's great, but it's not recovery. I had lots of deep meditations before I got sober, and it didn't change me because I wasn't dealing with the moment by moment, day by day life of trying to live by these principles, by sila and samadhi, by virtue and right view. So what if it wasn't, really clear and explicit in what Ajahn Pasano was saying? Right view, that the one of the key elements of right view is seeing and understanding cause and effect. In other words, the law of karma. And so one of the things we do when we're meditating is we watch, and I think I was referring to this in the guided meditation, we watch how a thought triggers an emotion, how an emotion triggers a sensation in the body, how what's going on in our mind is a result of things in the past, how everything is connected, cause and effect. And that we can't just jump in and do something to fix all that, that it's a training, right? As he says, that we need to maintain. This is why, maybe try to finish sentences. We need to maintain this process, our connection to this process, day by day, moment by moment, as best we can. And this is why, in the recovery world, we ask people, and we consider it significant how long we've been in recovery. And this isn't to shame people here who might not have a lot of time or had a drink last night or this morning, but just that there's a process of change, of growth, that depends upon time to some extent, to cause and effect, step by step, to the training. And the same is true in Buddhism. How long was when if somebody goes on a meditation retreat, the first question we ask them is, how long was the retreat? After that, we might ask them how it was, but there's an understanding that in recovery and in meditation, there are always ups and downs. It's not about arriving somewhere. It's about the journey, not to be too cliched, but just continuing on. And so it really helps, because life is challenging and stuff keeps happening, and we get distracted and we get thrown off and we get sick and we get, things, bad things happen, good, wonderful things happen. We lose track. And to have simple guidelines like sila and samadhi, virtue and right view. I was like, okay, I just need to get back to that. What am I doing? How is that manifesting? How am I manifesting in the world? How do I feel about that? Is it feel right? And am I taking the next right action? Creating the karmic causes for, a wholesome and positive unfolding. And then, meditating is just what I do because that's what I do. It's the training that I do. It's my daily practice. It's my daily commitment. I just show up. Many, many times when I sit down to meditate or before I meditate, in my mind, it feels like, well, this is pointless. Like right now, this isn't going to work, or I'm not really in a good place to meditate right now. But I just do it. And almost invariably, I feel better. I don't like to say always, but yeah, mostly always. I feel better when I do it, right? And that's like, just keep showing up. It's just like going to a meeting. You rarely come out of a meeting and go, man, I wish I hadn't wasted that hour. I could have been, whatever, jogging. I encourage you to investigate these terms, Hiri and Otapa, the protectors of the world, and reflect on your relationship to that. To me, one of the things that's behind my relationship to Hiri and Otapa is what I just call good faith, that I'm acting in good faith. And this is where, I see this in the larger world, in the political world, and in the business world, whether people are acting in good faith or not, or speaking in good faith, is so critical. Because, like, for two people can say they want to accomplish the same thing, but one of them is saying that just to get something else, right, out of selfishness. And one of them is saying it because they really do want it and they really care. And that good faith is like Buddhist monks kind of embody good faith, like, so in a way, this is how I think of Hiri and Otapa, is this good faith that we want to, we're sincerely trying. And that then brings in right intention. So we're actually, much of the Eightfold Path is contained in this teaching. Right view is part of the Eightfold Path. Mindfulness, which is required in this. The precepts, the other, and right speech and right livelihood. And then we can see right effort, right intention, right concentration. They're all part of this simple teaching. So we start with this simple seed and, of good faith or Hiri and Otapa, and then let that, see how it expresses itself, what the natural way of living, what that demands of us. If we are going to practice in this way, we almost invariably have to come to this path. The path itself provides the most, the clearest way to manifest these simple teachings. So that's more than enough for me, and I appreciate you guys just showing up today, and just I hope that's of some value. You can take that some and find some value in it. So thank you. We'll open it up and see if anybody wants to share or comment or add or subtract, divide, multiply. Well, I know that everybody has been thinking, but maybe you don't want to share what's been in your mind. You're going to force me to advertise otherwise. So, okay, great, Debbie. Thank you. Morning, dear.
Kevin. Good morning.
Hi.
Hello, everyone. I have really missed being able to be at this meeting for various causes and conditions. And being able to attend the in-person retreat on Sunday with you was just so wonderful.
Yeah.
And it felt so good to be in person in this way. And anyway, this morning, as I was just going about all my to-dos, the pile still, right? But I was home. And even though I have not attended this group for a while, I still have my alarm set. It's set every day for 10 minutes. I always get the reminder. So it's like no matter where I am, I'm reminded. And so today I just happened to be home, sitting at my computer doing. And I went, ah, take a breath and just show up. I could actually do it. I was here.
Yeah.
And it just feels so good to be back and feel so nourished. And I love these teachings on Hari and Otapa. And so often, for me, I lose the respect for myself. Hari is a little bit weak. You know, I can show up, it seems like, for others. And so, just coming back, I love this reading, Nourishing the Roots, coming back to our foundation. And just as you presented everything, yes. I mean, who does not want this? And then why is it often so hard? And then I go back to the first noble truth. They're suffering, right? And we're not going to change that innate characteristic of who we are as human beings. And so I, as you mentioned as well, is I'm actually, you know, grateful I'm an alcoholic. Thought I'd never say that, because it really brought the reality to the forefront and brought the this realization, this understanding that I need to train my mind, or it's gonna keep running away with me. And yeah, I might like all the little tangents that goes on. I might get a little addicted to the agitations or to whatever, but oh, it just feels so good to come back and to be still and to listen and to really know that deep inside, I have this wholesome desire to do no harm and to offer good to the world. And it just warms my heart to be able to continue to have that nurtured with groups like this. So thank you so much. I just had an abundance to share with gratitude. Thank you.
Well, I'm enjoying just hearing you speak and hearing you talk, Debbie. It's really nice. That reminded me that maybe you'd like to tell people you have still have the group for Napa Valley.
Yes, yeah. Every Thursday morning, I'm offering meditation on Zoom from 9 a.m. to 9:45 on Zoom through Napa Valley Insight
Yeah.
Meditation.
Do you
And
have
then
a link you can put in the chat for people who
give
might
me.
like to do that, join that?
Okay, I'll
Yeah,
go
just,
and search
take your
that
time.
out. Okay, yeah. And then Saturday mornings, I also offer similar practice
Good.
as
Yeah,
well.
or give people your website or whatever. Yeah, just for
Okay.
people to know that Debbie is also a Dharma teacher, so
Thank you.
lovely. Yeah, thank you.
Feels so good to be here.
Yeah, it sort of does, doesn't
Yeah.
it? I don't know. It's I sometimes just feel that. Yeah, I mean, my job to me, you guys know, like I don't sit down and spend an hour planning my Dharma talk for Tuesday morning. For me, it's about showing up. It's about being here and. Whatever comes up, I trust that it'll be, okay. Oh, Gabrielle, go ahead.
Let's see. Okay.
Yeah.
Hi. My name is Gabrielle. I'm an alcoholic. This is and other things. This is my first opportunity to attend this meeting. I'm very grateful. I was with you on Sunday, Kevin, and with a bow to Abigail, randomly we were put into a small group of four. And Monica also, whom I see is here, and Abigail touted this meeting, and hence here I am. I've been sober through some grace for 36 years, but I've been kind of fooling around with some other substances lately. That would be marijuana, and I wrote a confessional to Kevin, and I realized being here today how absolutely critical Sangha or, a 12-step meeting, anything, group, the group is to my well-being and my ability to carry on a really honest relationship with myself and the world. And I remember, Kevin, when you handed us the metta to discuss, someone commented on one of the lines, "Let none deceive another." And someone made a comment about how self-deception was one of the things that was so critical in implied in that. And it just struck me. Anyway, I'm rambling, but I've had 3 days now with no puff, and I feel like so strong, and I'm on my path, and I'm going to reunite my sobriety with my being clean as well as sober, and lay it all at the feet of my meditation practice and my Dharma and this new Sangha that I hope I can be part of, and all of you on this journey. And so I'm very, very grateful and wish everybody a very happy New Year. Thank you so much.
Lovely, Gabrielle. Thank you very much. And good job, Abigail. What can I say? I don't know. It's good, we just do the best we can. It's as Debbie mentioned, there is this first noble truth of the unsatisfactoriness of things. And it's so easy to go looking for something to make it feel satisfactory for at least for a moment. And this is how we get into trouble. But there's a lot more joy and satisfaction to be found in the path, in the spiritual path, and the recovery path. But it's just requires us to be present, which is maybe the biggest challenge. I don't know, but it's ironic, isn't it? I mean, that being present is where we find the real joy and richness of life, but it's also where we find the pain of life. And our addiction is, this kind of like making a contract where I'm willing to give up the broader fullness of life so that I don't have to experience the stuff that I don't like. And of course, ultimately that doesn't work. So this is how we wound up here. If that actually worked, it might be a workable contract, but eventually it just, the shrinking crushes us in some way. So, well, looks like we've run past 11, and don't see any other hands. So, I will be back next Tuesday. We're flying tomorrow and coming back on Monday. So, perfect timing, so I don't miss any Tuesday mornings. Not that I would have to miss it anyway. They have the internet in Hawaii too, I understand. Anyway, really, really appreciate you guys, old friends and new friends.
Speaking
It's
of
been,
old friends, Steve has his
yes.
hand.
Oh yeah, Steve has his hand up. Excellent, thank you. Go
I
for
just
it.
want to make a quick comment and come clean. I was supposed to have company on Sunday, and that company decided not to come. And in hindsight, I should have just gotten my butt in my car and drove down to Woodacre, but I have to say I'm addicted to laziness, so I didn't do it. And now I was like, I'm going, oh man, it's just you and your lazy butt. You should have just got up and gotten your car and showed up down there. But I'll see you at the retreat coming up. I'm looking forward
Yeah,
to that.
good. And thank you, Steve, for saying that. But I think, I mean, this is kind of what I think Spirit Rock is dealing with. And rather than calling it laziness, I would just say that we've become more used to not having to get out of our pajamas or, go somewhere. And, the rain, it was terrible weather. And, and it's fun. We all know this thing about like, oh God, it's just such a pain to have to do that. And then we get ourselves and we do it and we're like, oh, I'm so glad I did it. But this is what the pandemic did to us. And this is what's literally crushing Spirit Rock. Like they say that people won't come to my classes, but they won't open up my Friday night monthly class to be in person because they say people won't come. And again, they seem to need a lot of staff to run that, and so it's expensive. We shall see. I offered to go and donate my fee or whatever they pay me. I don't know, even know how it works these days, but to the staff. I'll just come. And we'll see that. I wrote to them before Christmas, and that, we'll see what they how they respond to
One of
that.
the, and plus, real quick here, one of the guys in my morning men's group, he lives up on Saturna Island up in British Columbia. And he was asking me, he says, what about that Buddhist group that you, that 12-step stuff that you do? And he says, my wife Monica is taking a course with some guy. I think his name is Rick or something like that. And then I go, are you talking about Kevin Griffin? He goes, ask the guy. It's something about Buddhism and the 12 steps. And so anyway, she's a psychologist, and she's going to be taking some course with you soon coming up. I don't know what it is.
Huh, I don't either.
But I thought that was funny, somebody way off in the boondocks. Hey, you're pretty well known up there. So anyway,
Not my fault.
I'm showing up here. That's what matters.
Yes, thanks, Steve. Good to
All
see
right.
you. Monica, you had something you needed to say?
Oh, I was just gonna thank you.
Well.
It was really powerful. I was talking it over with someone yesterday. And we were just going over the points. You made some amazing points, and I
Well,
loved when you couldn't find your pick. I mean, I dropped picks inside my guitar, and then I'm looking all over, and I was just like, "This is delightful." I mean, I wasn't laughing at you. I was just going like, "Yeah, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. Thank you so much for everything." And I wish I could just drive down the road to Spirit Rock,
Yeah, it
but
was nice.
I'm 17 hours away or something.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and we didn't, I guess I don't know if you guys could see the room.
It was big. You had a lot of people.
Yeah,
Yeah.
there was a really good turnout, which was really delightful. Yeah, well, thank you for saying that. But anyway, oh, I was going to say, rather than talking about myself, I'll talk about myself in a more helpful way, which is they recorded much of that day. So people who weren't there or who want to hear it again, that should be available on Dharma Seed in the upcoming weeks. So, I'll maybe keep an eye on that and let you know. Okay, so.
And what's happened to AA, well, a lot of the 12 step here in this area is that, me included, we start having night blindness. I have not
Yeah.
significant night blindness that nobody can do
Right.
anything about. So I can't go out to a meeting at night. So.
Yeah, I understand. not enjoying driving at night myself. We really don't need to be recording all this. I don't
I
have
know, no, I'm
I
sorry.
don't have
Yep,
the capacity to turn off the recording, unfortunately, Betsy.
I do. Hang
So
on.